The Me Too movement has swept Hollywood, exposing sexual harassment and assault allegations against high-profile men in the media and entertainment industries. But our next guest says many women in middle-class or blue-collar jobs are victims of sexual harassment, and they haven't had that same kind of moment. There are still barriers in the way that can keep them from reporting harassment. Ellen Bravo is with us now. She's co-director of Family Values at Work. Ellen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
The word high profile comes up a lot in the stories we've been seeing about sexual harassment and sexual assault, for that matter, at the workplace. For the most part, do you think we're overlooking what's going on in the everyday jobs, the middle class, working class jobs out there?
Absolutely. But the good news is that some of those high profile women got that message and spoke out in the Time's Up approach that they took at the Golden Globes. They invited representatives of the groups that are really in the thick of it, people who are not covered by anti-discrimination law, like domestic workers and agricultural workers, and people like restaurant workers who get paid sub-minimum wage, have to rely on tips to pay their bills, and therefore have a very difficult time, getting rid of sexually harassing customers or managers. And so that was great that they lifted up that problem. There's a lot of work left to do, but it was an exciting moment that those of us who had felt that there was an overstatement of whether we were at a tipping point because we were ignoring the voices of so many who are simply not seen or heard. It was great to have these high-profile women use their visible moment to call attention to that as well.
And in a recent piece you wrote, you say there's really a fundamental power imbalance in many workplaces that makes it difficult, maybe even impossible, for women to report sexual harassment, and even if they do, to get some kind of redress for that.
Right. So start with the ones who just simply aren't covered by the law. You know, when the labor law was passed, there was a deal made with white Southern senators that the mainly black employees who did domestic work and agricultural work wouldn't be covered by that law, and that's never been fully remedied, for starters. Secondly, there is no law that says that a company has to have a sexual harassment policy or make it familiar to people or make it fair and usable. Now, if you're caught that having a sexual harassment going on in your workplace and you haven't done anything to prevent it and haven't created those channels, that will be used against you. But simply avoiding it in the first place brings no penalty. So there are lots of people who right now are being harassed and haven't the faintest idea who to tell, or the person that they would tell is the person who's harassing them. And then there are a lot of people who don't realize that if they do report it and they don't get a satisfactory response, they can go to a government agency and that they don't need to have money to do that. And then that government agency's funds have been cut, so their staff is not sufficient to handle the backlog of cases. There's a long wait. Just at a time when we need more staff, they're experiencing these cutbacks. So there's a lot of very concrete things to do that I pointed out in that op-ed I did in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Lots of steps that need to be taken.
And before we get to some of the solutions, I want to lay out the problem a little more. You also write about fears of retaliation, of job loss for women, especially at low-income jobs, who don't have a financial cushion to survive that.
I can't tell you how many people I've spoken to who've said some version of this, that the person who was harassing them either said, "I know where you live," or, "You're a nobody going against a somebody. Who do you think they're going to believe?" That's pretty intimidating when you have no power and you're going up against someone who does. And, you know, they're not going to say they fired you because you complained about sexual harassment. They're going to make up some flaw in your work performance and say they're firing you for that. So it's a real barrier for lots of people. You know, you can have a situation where the boss is literally putting his hands down your shirt. These are the kinds of, you know, stories that we hear and are familiar with, and very little recourse. The good news is that more and more people are realizing that there are women's groups and others that want to help, and there may be some places they can call. 9to5, for example, where I used to work, and where, you know, we wrote a book called The 9to5 Guide to Combating Sexual Harassment. They have an 800 hotline, and you know, they're one of the groups that people can call and get some support and links to actions that they can take.
One other obstacle you point to is what's called mandatory arbitration. So when you sign up to work at a place, your employment contract says, hey, you can't bring complaints to court. We'll supply an arbitrator. They'll work out whatever the complaint might be. Why do you see this as a problem?
The problem is, first of all, that the arbitrator is often someone that is selected by the employer and is likely to side with the employer, so there's a lack of confidence that it will be a good outcome. But even if it's a good outcome in the sense that the person who's harassed is believed and some remedy is taken, what goes along with it is a gag order, silence. You can never tell. You have to promise that you won't ever mention it, that you won't reveal any details, and really all that. And the company doesn't have to admit that they did anything wrong. And what that means is that you don't know if there are other people that it's happening to. You don't have any way of finding each other. And the company avoids the very thing that it most needs to do, which is to say, hey, how big a problem is this? And what can we do to stop it? Where are the weak points and what are we going to do? And often the harasser gets away with it in the sense that the company maybe will make some settlement, but the person who's been responsible may not have to change their behavior at all. And that's a huge problem.
We're talking to Ellen Bravo, co-director of Family Values at Work, talking about sexual harassment in the workplace and possible solutions. Ellen, we've seen just last summer a big settlement from the Ford Corporation over racial and sexual harassment at two Chicago plants. This problem goes to, you know, individual-owned businesses you referred to earlier. It seems like this is at all levels of our economy, companies like Uber too, new, old, big, small. Why are we here?
Right.
Why are we here?
Yeah, that's exactly. You know, it's good to point this out that places that are male dominated tend to have higher incidence of sexual harassment. But really, there is no workplace that is free of it, and there's no level of job title. The recent Tempo survey showed that lots of women in high level jobs are still experiencing this. And another thing that I've heard many times in my life is, I could have done something, but it would have been career suicide. Nobody would have wanted to hire me after that because I'd be labeled a troublemaker. Just the opposite of what people should do. They should be thanking those who come forward and expose the problem. And why we're here is that we haven't gotten to the root of it. You know, sexual harassment is intrinsically connected to the undervaluation of women and women's work and lack of power. So until we get to, you know, really solve the problem of equal pay, time for caregiving, leadership positions, and so on, we won't eliminate harassment. It's an offshoot of all of those other things.
You spend a lot of your piece talking about solutions. What are some things you'd like to see now that this is on the public agenda happening in 2018?
Well, I'm glad to see that there'll be this legal fund, but really what the people who are most experiencing this in low-wage jobs need is support and funding to the organizations that help them organize. That's what that's going to take. People need to work together to change the laws. So some of the things I mentioned, making sure that labor law includes all groups like domestic workers and agricultural workers, making sure that there's a law that says employers must have a policy and must make it known and familiar, getting rid of the archaic procedures in Congress so that we have remedies for people who work in the government of the United States of America. Those are some of the steps that need to be taken. Employers, there's a lot of actions that they can take even without any change in the law. Remember that employers can always be more generous than the law requires. And so the first place for them to start is by doing an audit, an anonymous survey that's best done once a year that says, tell us what's happening, and ask very specific questions. Have you experienced, because let's just define what we're talking about, behavior of a sexual nature that is unwelcome, offensive, usually repeated, and makes it harder to have or do your job? We're not talking about friendly banter. We're not talking about people dating. We're talking about vulgar, humiliating behavior that is meant to demean. So find out, is it happening? And if so, are people reporting it? If not, why not? And be really specific in the questions you ask them. Is it because you think you won't be believed, you'll be retaliated against, which is a very common experience? Is it because you don't want to get someone in trouble? Is it because you don't want yourself to get in trouble, et cetera? And so start with that, figure out what's going on, and then put together, if you have a union, that's the best, and if not, put together a group of workers to help you figure out how to proceed. What are some steps that need to be taken? You know, sometimes the problem is that there aren't enough channels, and especially for people at the top, that the only way you can report it is by going to someone whose job depends on that person at the top. That's who hires them and determines their pay. For them, you need an outside 800 number. That's a really important piece that often gets left out.
Ellen, you write that these problems can be solved if we have the will to do it. Do you see that will out there over the last month or so?
Well, what's inspiring is that we've seen people say, we will not let this continue. The moment that Oprah Winfrey pointed out in her speech, your time is up. However, there's lots of people for whom that isn't yet true, and a lot of work that needs to be done. So we can't overestimate the change and underestimate the kinds of things that have to happen. The good news is we know what it looks like, we know how to do it, and there are places that have done it well. And we know what these legal changes need to happen are. That's where we need political will. We unfortunately have someone occupying the White House who is himself a serial predator. And that makes it very difficult to believe that we'll get the leadership we need at the top. But I think there's enough momentum among people all over the country that hopefully those kind of conditions are going to change. Who gets to make decisions about the laws we have?
Ellen, thanks for joining us today. That was Ellen Bravo, co-director of Family Values at Work.